What's going on, everybody, and welcome to the Ask a CISP podcast. This is a weekly podcast that coincides with the other side of the firewall, where we talk about the latest and greatest of cybersecurity news, as well as we highlight those movers and shakers and glass ceiling breakers, those people of color have made to the other side of the proverbial firewall. My name is Ryan Williams, and joining me today is returning guest, Daryl Brooks. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. About yourself, Ryan?
Oh, I can't complain. It's always a good time, have a good conversation with some good people. So you're a returning guest. So we spoke in the past. I want to say it was probably a quarter ago, maybe, at the most.
Yes. Last July, I think. Yeah.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was right before Independence Day. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So, yeah. So it's good. So it's almost an annual recap, right? So we can catch up on all the good stuff you've been doing. I think prior to us recording last time, you had already obtained your CISSP.
In January. Yeah. Yeah. Just recently back in January of 2023. So, yeah, it was just still fresh. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So definitely want to jump to some questions. We didn't get a lot of questions. We did get one from Darius Phillips. So he's a friend of the podcast as well. I had him on a couple weeks ago. He's a entrepreneur, CMMC assessor, has a podcast, all that good stuff. So it's kind of cheating, right? He's already a CISSP. I was hoping for somebody else to chime in, but it's cool. We have plenty of stuff to talk about. We've already together behind the scenes come up with some topics that we can cover. But first, I'd like for you to reintroduce yourself to the audience, especially since it's almost been a year. Just a quick recap of who you are, a little bit about your background and what you currently do. And then we'll jump right into all your latest initiatives, as well as our topics for this episode.
So my name is Daryl Brooks. I have my CISSP. Managed to earn that back last January 20. I've been in the federal sector for a little over 20 years now. I have a bachelor's in management information systems and a master's in information security management and just several other just along the way. So as far as what I've been doing since the last time we've spoken, actually had quite a lot going on. So I kind of did a I don't want to say sidetrack, but I went more into the realm of project management.
Okay.
So I managed to I started off by getting my skilled agile framework that's a SAFe 6.0, a release train engineer certification. So that's in essence a scrum master who coaches other scrum masters in major releases those who have that framework. And I've got my Lean Six Sigma green belt.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. So on the cyber front, I managed to do a ride-along with my employer's pen testing team. So I did some traveling with them. Well, first, we did a remote pen test with a client that they had. So I got to see prep the things that they do. I mean, it was really awesome seeing how they just did kind of the social engineering, how they built out the fake site, the email campaign. And then I traveled with them to Missouri on site to the client's physical location and saw how the operators there conducted the pen testing and then the refile and everything like that. It was just really cool to kind of see the things that I had learned in the classroom setting to actually see it on such a grand scale. So it was a really awesome experience. And then right after that, I had the opportunity to travel to Portland, Oregon to attend I'm not sure if you heard of it, the Defense Intelligence Agency's DOGIS conference. So that was very, very good, which a lot of things that they talk about were, AI and then quantum computing and just all the vendors there and everything that they, were trying to sell to the DOD and just kind of hearing some of their speeches and things like that. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I'm familiar with the DIA. So is that an annual conference? Because I have not heard of the conference, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah, apparently they've been doing it for like the last 20-something years. I can't remember how many. It's like over 20 years. So they've been doing it for a while. I had never heard of it until I went back in December. So, no, it was great. So besides that, I'm currently studying for my PMP. So I plan on sitting for that later in the next month. So
Doing
a lot of study with that. Yes. So your announcement with the acid PMP was very timely.
I was trying to claim squatter rights is what I was trying to do. So I brought it up. It's an episode that may have just aired last Friday I brought it up and I was like, oh man, my plan was to release a video. I just didn't have the time. I was getting ready for vacation and I was like, but I have to do something with it because I'm going to bring it up on the podcast and bring it up to the audience. I have to have something already in the pipe with it just so I can not necessarily claim it as IP, but just that I'm doing something with the idea, right?
Gotcha.
Make sure I don't let it either go to waste. I've been thinking about it for a while now, but I just haven't had the time. So that's where kind of Ask a PMP was born out of, right? I already have Ask a CISSP. It was like, you know, I've been a PMP for a year longer than I've been a CISSP, and I would like to start to engage with other PMPs in the field. So there it is. But with you pursuing it, like I'm very excited for you. So you're doing it. I think you're doing it the correct way. You've already you've been battle tested. You've already conquered what I believe to be the harder of the two tests, and the PMP is tough. Like, so I took the PMP first and I was like, this is the hardest test I've ever taken in my life. Yeah. And it wasn't because it was poorly written. Like, we've taken a lot of tests. They're just not written well.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not built necessarily with what feels like a lot of experience. It's more of how do we make a hard test, not how do we make a comprehensive test.
Right.
And both the PMP and the CISSP were both very well written. But the PMP was my first introduction to it and it kicked my butt the first time.
So I'm gonna have to really pick your brain offline because some of them maybe you know sometimes with these practice tests they make them somewhat harder than the actual thing. But what I'm running into on the practice tests are these very subjective, and this is that I guess that's for me. It personally seems like one of the hardest tests that I've had to prepare for or taken because of just how subjective some of the answers and scenarios can be. So it's like a lot of the questions are like, what's the best thing to do?
Oh yeah, that's the test, yes.
And and it's like, it's so because I'm reading it and I'm just like, no, that's not what you would do. And then I read the explanations like, how would they have figured that I would have like known that? Like, well, I'll give you an example. So it was like, well, you're having a problem with like identifying stakeholders, because this means you're creating your project charter. So which one of these documents would be the best to find out, you know, to be able to best identify who's the best to hand down as a stakeholder. So, you know, of course, they had the stakeholder register, had the stakeholder engagement plan. Okay, do you know what the answer actually was for that? It was the issue log.
Oh.
And so it was the issue log because, you know, you can deduce that based on certain major issues, the person who's associated with that issue or whatever, they'll probably be a good candidate for a stakeholder. And to this day, that question just blows my mind.
Right.
I really felt like getting up and just smashing my computer at that point. Because it's like, come on.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, if that was the thing, right? So you, because it's an ever evolving process. So mm-hmm. if you were to identify somebody in the issue log that was someone who was going to be a stakeholder, then you would put them on the stakeholder registry, right? You would have put them into the communications matrix. You would have done a lot of things, would have been updated because of that. There is some subjectivity, but for me, it was mostly here's three correct answers. But depending upon where you're at within the project, which right. one would have been. So there's a lot of that, which is not, I'm not giving away the secret stuff. They tell you.
So yeah, that's another
thing. It's about you being in the shoes of being the PMP, right?
It's knowing the order of things. And because the answer could be right or wrong depending on the order of things. And like you said, where you are in the process and right. just having to reread that question several times to point out several parts, to point out that part of where they're telling you where you are in the process so you can best identify the best answer to that right. or to the question. So.
Right. Yeah, it definitely has every test, at least every test on that tier, right? The PMP, the CSSP, so on and so forth, the SHRM, CP, they all want you to be within their, so to speak, model. Like, how do we exactly. think is how you should think. So right. that's a lot of that as well. So like, if you have experience being a project manager, if experience being a security person, it kind of trips you up because you're like, no, that's not what I would do with my 20 years of experience or my decade experience. But how will IEC2 do it? How will PMI do
there
it?
There you go. And that's what all the training courses that I've taken, that's what they all said. They said, actually, the less experienced you are, probably the better you're going to do on a test because yeah. the more experienced you are, you're going to be constantly trying to lean to, you know, your own experience. And it's like, no, you have to do it within a PMI framework. What does PMI want? Not what have you done and what, you know, what has made sense for you in the past. So no, that definitely correlates.
Right. And what PMI will probably say in their defense, they would probably say, well, you've picked up some bad habits. So this is the proper way of doing it. So there's that as well. But I heard actually, it's anecdotally, but I heard that people who study law do the best on the PMP.
I can definitely see that.
So for me, I kind of had to think in those terms, like, okay, I need to burn away all of my previous experience to a certain extent. To just like the train of thought is how will PMI want to approach this? And again, it helps you to eliminate maybe 2 out of 4 because you still have a tiebreaker because the answers are so they're both right. It's just like, what am I doing currently and what's going on around me that determines what the answer should be. So but I think you'll do fine. Like, again, like when I took the PMP, I was like, this is the hardest test ever. And then I took the CISSP and I was like, no, this is the hardest test. But no, that's good on you. So yeah, hopefully you enjoy the experience, right? Like it's, again, it's one of those very long tests. But hopefully you knocked out of the park and then have you back on. And by then, hopefully the show will be running, right? Because I would like to do at least one Ask a PMP, maybe a month or so. I got to just figure out how I'm going to fit into the schedule. Because I think it's an untapped portion of my audience, right? They want to talk as well. They want to hear from their, you know, peers and counterparts. And again, those movers and shakers, the glass ceiling breakers. So I think it'd be a good expansion to the platform. Because I when I look through my list, I know a lot of PMPs about to add another one to the list, right? It's going to be you on there as well. So I would definitely like to have those conversations because it's something that you're passionate about, right? Like when you control a project, you're like, man, this is my baby. So you're trying to get your baby through all the challenges to finally graduation day. And then you hand over to operations. There you go. Baby's ugly, but that's your baby now. So. But yeah, I can't wait. So we'll see what the future holds. But let's go back to you, right? This is the purpose of this episode is to pick your brain and to you know, get your vantage point on some of these topics. So before we proceed, though, I definitely wanted to cover. So we talked about your background. You have 20 years federal experience. But I wanted to go over the program that was your pathway in. Just a quick recap, because it's been brought up in the past on the different routes to federal contracting, federal employment, things of that nature. And I know you have a very interesting pathway that you're able to bridge that gap. And I kind of just want to bring it up. People were trying to see if they want to jump into cyber, but they don't have, let's say, all of the experience right now, but they're working on the education track and then they're working towards gaining that experience. What was the program that you utilized that brought you into the field?
So I started off as something, and I think they may have consolidated off into the Pathways program, that internship program in the federal government. But when I first started, doing my federal internships was back in like 03 when I was just finishing my freshman year in college. It was the STEP program. So that was it, and that was like the government's official student internship program.
Right.
I started off just it wasn't IT. I started off with the U.S. Park Police, doing general administrative things. But over time, working with doing some internships with them, I finally got an opportunity. And the STEP program to finally do an IT internship with the Federal Trade Commission. So after doing that in grad school, I went to Bowie State University. So we're in the DMV area, DC, Maryland, Virginia area. So which is very heavily federal focused. So right. So when we had job fairs, they kind of big presence there. So they were on our on Bowie State's campus, the federal government, and I managed to speak with to a branch chief there from DHS 1 year, and that got me through the STEP program into another internship. Again, not IT related, but it did increase my I don't want to say GS level, but I guess what would you call that outside the federal sector? My pay grade.
Pay grade.
I guess my pay grade. Yeah. And then from another job fair while I was in grad school, I got into another program. Again, I think this all may be consolidated under now the Pathways program. I'm not 100% sure, but it was another program called the FCIP program, where this was basically you had a 2-year probationary period where you would climb to grayscales. You would climb a grayscale each year, and then if the employer liked you and just it was a good fit, then you would stay on permanently, which I did. Now it's through Social Security Administration, and that became my first full-time federal job. So I had gained a bunch of federal experience from that, some IT experience too. But my first official federal, full-time federal government job was with the Social Security Administration, and that was from the FCIP program. Again, I don't believe that's in existence to this day, but I think they consolidated all those programs under the Pathways program. They just may have different versions of that now.
Gotcha. So that's good. So I asked that question to kind of highlight how there's multiple ways to get in, right? So when I talk to people, like, I always push my bias being military. So if you're young, up and coming, you're not exactly sure what you want to do, come out of high school, or if you're early in college and you may want to take a pivot, then the Department of Defense, any branch, has cyber, they have IT, they have all that good stuff. They pay for your education, they'll pay for your certifications. Some branches do it different ways, right? So I'm biased. Air Force does it pretty steadily, right? They kind of push you towards at least their associates for the community college of Air Force, and then from there you move up to your bachelor's and certifications, things of that nature. They just ask that you knock out a lot of your prereqs for your CCAF, community college of Air Force degree first. But I know all the branches do it. So it's Air Force cool, Navy cool, Army cool, Marine cool, all that good stuff. I just know each branch has different restrictions on how quickly you can start to knock it out. But there's also the federal pathways, like you said, was aptly named pathways, to get kind of in the field. There's some prerequisites when it came to, you said you had your undergrad and your graduate and things of that nature that helped you to move up the pay scale and then make that pivot eventually.
So real quick, so two other things I wanted to make people aware of too, that's going around a way that they can get in with little to no experience. So I know ISC squared, those are that's the same certifying body that does the CSP. They have a free, right now it's still free, it's called Certified in Cybersecurity. You have to take a free course through them and then get certified. So it's a entry level cybersecurity course, but it's 100% free. I at first take a sample for the first 1 million people, but now I'm not even seeing the million person thing on there anymore. So I don't know how much longer they're going to be doing it, but I would definitely check that out. And then Sands, that's another very high profile industry leader in information security and certification. They have a program. I cannot remember what their program is called, but it's very similar to SC Square's certified in cybersecurity, where, again, you can get a free entry-level certification. But I believe through theirs, they do it through certain scholarships. So I know they do minority scholarships, women's scholarships, and I believe military scholarships. So that's worth checking out, too. At the moment, I just cannot remember the name of their program. But if you look up, like, free entry-level SANS certification, you should be able to find it. Maybe I'll send you the link to it, and you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely.
For people to take a look at.
Definitely. No, that's great you brought that up. So we had a guest on, my dates are all jacked up because I was going to say a few months ago, but I said a few months for you and it's almost been a year. But it wasn't that long ago. We had Delisha Hodo. So she is the assistant director and cybersecurity advocate for SANS. She spoke about a lot of those programs you just mentioned through SANS. Yeah, and it's amazing how many, like you said, they have some for minorities, some for women, some for military. There's a ton of different avenues into getting into the SANS Technology Institute and being awarded one of those certifications. I do not have any SANS certifications. I did not capitalize on the opportunity I had when I was in Turkey for the GCFA. I still have the books. I believe my voucher just expired. I just never found the time. I got too tied up in work. Like, you know, God forbid, got to do work at work sometimes. And I was unable to capitalize on it. But that's one of the only opportunities I've ever been presented where I didn't finish. I was just like, man, I started to study and I just got too roped up into work. But I really do wish I had pursued the GCFA and knocked it out. But,
oh, well, you know my story, right? So you preaching to the choir, man. I know what it's like to get sidetracked. So, yeah, trust me, I get it.
Yeah, it happens. But no, she's going to be back on the show and we'll talk about all those initiatives as well. But yeah, if you find something in the meantime, I'll stick in the show notes for this episode. But yeah, there's multiple paths. There's multiple ways to get in to cyber because I know a lot of people are like, how do I break in? How do I get in? There's no one set path, I'd say, because they're like, well, should I get my degree? Should I get the experience? Should I get the certifications? Get all three. But I believe experience is paramount. So however you can obtain that experience through whatever you're currently doing, right? Is the best way of doing it. So if you're already doing something in some sort of field that has a risk management framework, which most do, then figure out how are they being assessed or audited and how can you get in the mix as well. I think that's also a good path to getting in. We kind of covered that when I was speaking with Alan Wesley on the previous Ask SSP, which would have been, I believe, 2 episodes ago. When this is recorded. So it's either 2 or 3 episodes ago. So if you have not checked that out, we answered the question from a gentleman. He said he was 61. He was trying to join the cybersecurity field and he was currently in health administration. And we're like, oh man, you already have high trust. You already have HIPAA. You have a bunch of, you have the language down. You just have to figure out how can I help with the next assessment or next audit? And that will get your foot in the door as well. So there's multiple paths. So don't be discouraged. There's a way to get in. So we'll keep highlighting those. But before I get us too sidetracked, right, I definitely want to go over our topics, discuss those. And then before we get out of here, I definitely want to land the plane on what you're doing outside of your profession, right? What are we doing to relax? What are we doing to upskill and learn and just the things we're doing outside of our 9-to-5. So I definitely want to cover that as well. Before I move on too far, I always forget, please like, share, subscribe, all like this stuff. There's a bell involved. Hit it. We are everywhere. So we are on LinkedIn primarily, but now I've branched off to doing a bunch of content on YouTube. We have a newsletter on LinkedIn. We have a publication on Medium. So if you like to consume your content there, you can. Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok's still flaky. TikTok don't want me. I don't want you. But while you're before you get banned, I would like to get some videos on there. There's 140 million people I would like to also share with before I get restricted. But if you could think of a platform, we're probably on it in some form or fashion. Look for the other side of the firewall, the other side of the FW, or ask a CISP for our content. So jumping over to our topics. Okay, so we picked three. We discussed prior to a bunch of good stuff. So the first one comes from Reuters. It is U.S. warns that hackers are carrying out disruptive attacks on water systems. This was written a few days ago by Raphael Sater or Sitar. I'm terrible with names. I'm like the dude from the Keen Pill skit. Like, I will mess your name up, right?
It's not Blake.
Aaron. I will mess it up. But with that being said, so I want to bring this one up because it keeps coming up. Like, this is a topic that we've talked about several times. I think we've had at least four different shows based upon it. It is not going anywhere. If anything, it seems to be getting worse because now the federal government is warning governors that, hey, make sure your state's on his toes because they're trying to hack our water systems and potentially be disruptive or harmful or God knows what they're trying to do with our water. So what are your thoughts on this? Like, what have you been thinking about?
So I'd say, your subject matter is here, Ron, are very timely for me because just a few weeks ago, I just kind of threw in just my own little independent research on things. I actually was looking at some things when it came to overall SCADA systems. For those who don't know what SCADA systems are, that's an example of like those water systems.
Right, industrial technology.
Exactly. So that's supervisory control and data acquisition systems. And like you said, those mainly you find those in industrial sectors like utility sectors, water, oil, pipeline. So, I mean, you would think after 2021's Colonial Pipeline incident, and when we saw firsthand, you know, what happened with that as far as the panic buying and things like that, you know, you really would have to, you know, like still write articles like that, still tell that in because we would have seen the, you know, the chaos and the impact that has on infrastructure. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I think the hardening on the attack surface of SCADAs is vital. I mean, you're talking about the physical infrastructure. I mean, these are things that, you know, control most of our natural resources, such as our nuclear power, electricity, oil, water, anything you can think of. When we get on a mass level, I mean, the SCADA systems are responsible for having those APTs, like, you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the C word, but like them, you know.
we say China all the time. That's why I'm probably blocked on TikTok, to be honest with you.
So like China, you know, some of our rivals and enemies, you know, they're always looking for a way to worm their way in. That's another major thing that was heavily discussed at DOGIS, was basically moving at the pace of China, and China's definitely a culprit when it comes to, you know, these type of incidents. But I wanted to actually read some information I got from that research that I was doing a few weeks ago when it came to this, these SCADA vulnerabilities. So actually a 2019 study found the following vulnerabilities were prevalent within SCADA systems. So this is started from the top is public internet connectivity, unpatched legacy software, and we're talking about like operating systems such as XP in 2000 are still being used on these systems. Weak authentication, lack of antivirus software, rogue devices that's plugged into the network, undetected malware, and like I just got done saying, APTs, advanced persistent threats, remote management protocols that are open, basically someone being able to connect into the network remotely outside of it, which, you know, they're not supposed to be doing that. It should be locked down and hardened enough For people not to be able, you know, just to remotely connect it to your system.
That was here in Florida. So that was Oldsmar. We talked about it 2 years ago. They did a RDP, so remote desktop log into the system, and they tried to poison people.
Yep.
That's really happened. Like, if someone wasn't sitting there and watching the mouse start to scroll for no reason, like, they would have potentially killed people.
Yeah. Another one is wireless access points. So those are wireless access points that, again, that are unhardened, that just you know, they don't have the they don't have the right security configurations to basically do have those access control lists that you need to basically, you know, whitelist or blacklist certain, you know, devices from connecting to those access points within the network, and just overall high number of vulnerable devices on the network. So those are the top. And then then I'm gonna give you some another study in 2019 of the top prevalent the prevalence of some of these things.
Okay.
You have memory corruption represented 20% of vulnerabilities that were found in SCADA systems. Then you have credential management represented 19% of vulnerabilities. A lack of authentication, authorization, and insecure defaults represented 23% of vulnerabilities, 10% of
Right.
vulnerabilities, and other potential means represented 29%. So just want to throw those figures out there since I had them on hand.
Right.
And you know, it was the subject matter, so I thought, you know, it'd be a great thing to add to
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
conversation.
And it just goes to show, like, because you mentioned just end of life, either hardware or software, right? So, like, XP has been out of commission. Like, it's still being used in medical. It's still being used in, like you said, SCADA systems. It's being used in all the important places. However, it's been end of life for a very long time now. So it's been a culprit for the what WannaCry back when the National Health Service was attacked. It's been it was here in Oldsmar, Florida, when it came to the water treatment. I think they were on XP, and that's why they had the RDP vulnerability was still there. It's not Microsoft's fault. They've already
Oh,
told you not
no,
supporting no more.
no, yeah. I mean, once
But
something hits the
yeah.
end of life, I mean, it's up to the organization then to upgrade. I mean, like, you know,
Right.
it's one thing to not be at 11, it's another thing to be all the way, you know, 2 decades behind in XP. So, I mean,
Right. And I know the major cause is money. So it's
oh,
the paying for licenses or what have you, because if they're already running XP or God forbid ME Millennial Edition, those are free. You know what I mean? They've already purchased those. They're not paying for updates because there are no updates.
Right.
And then it's also cheaper because a lot of their I guess adjacent systems, right? The file records management, some of the servers, they're all out of date as well. So if you
Yeah.
upgrade one, you have to upgrade the other one, and then the cost comes into it. So it's kind of like playing roulette is what they're doing with both people's lives and their bottom line. Because you lost a reputation in this case. If you get hit because you're on Windows XP, that's not good. Someone's going to have to step out or step down. And then what about people's personal data, right? Like we talked about a couple of days ago, like your medical records were $60 a pop. So your medical records are way more valuable than your credit card, which I believe we said was around $3 or something to that. No, your Social Security was like $3. Your credit card was like $1 or something ridiculous. Like your medical
Dang,
records
that's all the
outweighed
Social
all of them
Security card goes by gold. It
it's
goes for
so
$3 now?
it's so easily available. Like
Oh.
we've been breached so many times. That's not worth anything. Now we want to know about your personal history so we can blackmail you for that. It's never ending. But we've been commoditized because of things like this, because of these data breaches. Like we are now the products as opposed to being the protected client, right? But no, I think those are all really good stats to share with the audience. It just goes to show how outdated a lot of these SCADA systems are. Like I remember when I was active duty a decade ago, the Air Force was trying to figure out how to protect their systems, right? Their water treatment plants, because a base is pretty much a city to itself. So it has a lot of those industrial systems built in, and obviously our enemies want to not only attack the populace, but what would be better than poison the base, right? You take a bunch of people out of commission, you have to fight now. So we're just trying to figure out how to harden those things and fix those things. And it's crazy to see that now that I'm out here in the private sector, they haven't figured it out, or they're just being too cheap to figure it out. And for all it's worth, and then we can move on to the next topic, but what keeps me, like you say, what keeps you awake at night or whatever the saying is not a near peer shooting a nuke at us, like ICBM or stuff like that, because we have systems for that. Like, we're on alert. It's mutual assured destruction. It's more of you wake up and you don't have the ability to drink running water. You don't have the ability to flush your toilet. You don't have power, right? Those are the things that make me worried, because those are the things they can do from a distance. They don't have to be on our soil to cause this type of hysteria and panic. Because when the Colonial Pipeline thing happened, what happened? People went crazy. They're putting gas in bags. That's smart.
The panic behind that actually caused more damage than the actual ransomware, because it was the panic buy, the panic buying, that really caused the shortage, and not necessarily, the ransomware in itself. So it's just the kind of the domino effect of all that.
Right. And that is how that is how we come about our undoing. It's not like we lap the rest of the world in military spending. Like, if they wanted to go head up, there would be big problems for them. They don't want that type of smoke. But if they can cause mass panic and casualty within inside our borders, right? It pays for itself. So that's what makes me nervous. And it seems like the administrations from the past three or four administrations have all made strides to try to make us more robust and protect us. However, there's only so much you can do before you're in the private sector trying to tell them what to do. And this is a free market, right? Where America land the free. So, like, what makes them update their systems? It has to be their clientele, right? I'm going to stop paying you if you don't fix these things. We have to vote with our wallet. And I think that's where Americans have an issue. I just want to be
Oh,
tough people.
I want to speak towards that so bad, but I cannot. I know some things, but I just can't speak
Right,
to
right, right. No, yeah, no, don't put it out there. But no, it's that's just what's heavy on my mind, right? Being on the outside now, stuff like that. Like, I know the military capabilities, right? I've been around a lot of really cool stuff. That's not a problem per se, but the big problem is like the guerrilla warfare stuff that makes me nervous. So let's see what the future holds. It looks like we're making steady strides to fix these things, and people are becoming more aware every day, because like, their dad's getting sold. So if you know what cybersecurity was a year ago, you know what it is now. But topic two. So next topic I wanted to cover was tax hackers blitz small business with phishing emails. This came from Dark Reading and is written by Becky Bracken, the senior editor. So I wanted to bring this one up because I think it's timely. Everybody's worried about their taxes. Regardless if you're getting money back or you have a tax bill, tax season is always very stressful for Americans. If you're overseas listening to this, you have no clue what we're probably talking about. They're like, we pay our taxes up front. Not in America. We gamble. Every year we find out, like, did I give them enough? Do I owe them money? Am I getting some money back? We do what we do. But with that being said, it opens us up for new social engineering vulnerabilities, right? So I kind of want to get your take on this and just what your thoughts are moving forward, because I think April 15th this year is the deadline. So it's coming up quick. People are starting to get worried.
So I think this is, I mean, it goes to show, like, just going, I mean, I guess moving forward into the future that we're in, and just moving forward, no matter who you are, no matter how big your business is, no matter how small it is, everybody has to, like, have to know cybersecurity on a fundamental level to know how to protect yourself. So they aren't just hitting the big corporations anymore just for ransomware and stuff. I mean, now they're taking your identity or your business identity from under you. And I actually have a personal story that I can share with. It's not necessarily about tax, but of us that became a victim of a cyber attack, but an indirect victim. So you remember a few years ago with the whole FAA breach?
Sounds familiar.
So there was a breach of Federal Aviation Administration. So my dad, He used to run, he sunsetted it now, but used to run a CPA firm.
Okay.
Most of his clientele was were federal agencies. So he had FAA was one of his major clients. So I think he had a liaison. I think he had, between the people on the inside who he dealt with, and then this person in the middle, and then himself. So he would talk to this one person, and they would get the payment information as far as how they were going to pay him and things like this or whatever. So then this breach happened. So apparently, I'm just coming up with scenarios of how this could have happened or whatever. So my thoughts are maybe it was some sort of man in the middle attack, or it could have been like the person somehow, had some type of privilege escalation, got the network and was able to read emails. I don't know. But what ended up happening is somebody basically pretended to be my dad, and it wasn't even the right email address or anything. They had all type of misspellings and everything, basically telling the liaison to, hey, could you change my account information to send the money here and not to what I gave you before? So several months went by, my dad hadn't got paid from FAA. So he inquired, saying, hey, where's my money?
Right.
Professional.
Right. Per my
So
last
they,
email, where's my money?
right. So they said, oh, well, let's look into it. And so they said, oh, well, you contacted us and you told us that you wanted to, we paid you, that you wanted us to change your payment information. So I never emailed you and told you anything. Show me what you're talking about. So you say it took them forever just to get the email solved, but they got the email solved. And he said, now, this isn't even my email address. And then look at all these misspellings and everything. You really think we would write something like this to you? He said, you all can't look at this and tell that this was fraudulent.
Right.
And so basically, it took my dad almost a year to finally, between fighting the FAA, and he had to actually hire a cybersecurity lawyer.
Oh,
So
wow.
he hired a cybersecurity lawyer, and it took almost a year for them to pay him. And then there was another set of services he was doing for them, where the cybersecurity, I think, lawyer was able to follow up with that, because they never followed up with the other thing, that the money that went out for that, he would have never gotten back for that either. So even though his company wasn't directly hit with the cyber
Right.
attack, an agency as big as FAA, I don't know, is was it a lack of training with the employees, or what, wasn't able to have some type of check and balances and some type of separation of duty, where the same person that deals directly with the client isn't the same person who's paying the client, okay? Because you would think
Right.
that, okay, once that one person passed the information off to the other person would raise some type of red flag, or there'd be some type of checks and balances in place to where one person just isn't the end all be all to somebody getting paid, or some type of change like that being made, change management, talking about project management, but
I hear
some type of major change like that, you have all type of checks and balances. So I don't know if it's a lack of proper protocols in place, a lack of training, all the above. I don't know. But I know my dad was a direct, he was directly impacted by the FAA, a cyber attack, and it didn't just impact them internally, but it also impacted, some of their external partners as well, which he falls under that.
Right. No, I think that draws really good parallels to not only this scheme, which involves social engineering for you to put your payment information into this fake portal and your social security number. So they're twofold. They're able to extract your social security number to do nefarious things to you later, but they also get an upfront payment because you think that you're paying your taxes through them, which they're. I hate to always say like they I'm always amazed, but I'm always amazed at how clever the bad guys are. Like, we're over here trying to think of like all of these schemes to do things legitimately. Like, how do I extract more capital out of this? How do I, build this or build that? How do I make a new offering? And they're just like, how do I convince you to give me money?
Right. Usually that
I give
methods
you a phone
are
call?
Very usually that method is very unsophisticated.
Yeah.
So you like you say you build all these sophisticated defense in depth models and everything and you're totally unprepared for just a total lack of sophistication that you know that they have in their attack methods. So
yeah, it's like the meme that you see on LinkedIn all the time. It's the person in the suit of armor, and it's just the arrow through the eye hole. It's like phishing email.
Right.
You have all this protection, except for right here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I also think it draws parallels to the issue with United Health. So, you know how recently we talked about how United Health was hit and it incidentally disrupted people's ability to get their medicine through pharmacies, like so GoodRx, Walgreens, CVS, the VA, Publix, a bunch of different organizations couldn't push out prescriptions for a time, but it's still disruptive to doctors and just, I should say, providers able to bill patients. So like they're still not able to get their money. So like they provided services, they're unable to collect because there's an issue with the payment system still. It's still disrupted. So again, it's indirect. So people are going to wind up, either those providers are going to wind up with gaps, right? Where's my money at? Just like your father is like, per my last email, send me my check, please. But then it's also people probably think that they've already paid, right? So what typically happens, at least from a DOD perspective, if you go to the local economy to get something done, sometimes they have issues billing TRICARE. So what turns out, what happens? If they can't get their money from TRICARE, they go directly for you. So now you're not getting the insurance portion paid for. They're like, hey, there's a bill due. We have your information. We can't get, like, you need to contact TRICARE because we tried. But until then, give me my money.
Wow.
So that happens all the time where you're just like, oh, man, I have to contact TRICARE and I got to try to get them on a three-way call to fix this. Because at the end of the day, the provider wants their money. They don't care where it comes from.
Right.
And TRICARE is like, we didn't get the phone call or, you know, whatever. Part of the process breaks down, but then the person, right, the human being that's caught in between the two systems is the one who suffers because of it.
Right.
So I think that draws really two really good parallels to your story. That's crazy, especially being such a large organization, but they're also a federal organization, so they're probably like, we don't have it in the budget. We paid somebody.
Yeah.
someone has that money.
But the whole thing smells of a lack of a proper train as far as security awareness. I mean that's basic security. That's basic security awareness 101. Be able to look at a phishing email and tell, see misspellings, look at the email address. I mean,
yeah, and that was our saving grace.
Right.
Yeah, that was our saving grace because now chatbots are taking that away. Like, so we're gonna have less and less indicators of nefarious activity because these things are getting just to be as clever as human beings.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know what the future is going to hold for that one. It's kind of makes you nervous, right?
one interesting note that I learned at DOTUS, and I was like, are they for real? There's actually a Skynet program, and this program was to target innocent. Targeted innocent people as advanced threats. So the Skynet thing, I don't know if the person who wrote Terminator is a prophet or what, but the Skynet thing is real.
Right. It's funny because Skynet was made by the Air Force in the Terminator movies. That's what we do.
Yeah, that scared the mess out of me, man, when I learned that at a conference, man. I said, Skynet is real and it's targeting people? Man.
Ridiculous. But yeah, that's the future, right? Things are getting crazy.
Yeah.
So topic three. I definitely want to cover topic three. I think this is also a really good one. And I think it kind of ties everything together, right? So another article from Dark Reading, it's titled Three Ways Businesses Can Overcome the Cybersecurity Skills Shortage. And this is written by Jesper Trolley. So he's the CEO of Exclusive Networks. So I thought this one was always timely, right? Like people are always trying to figure out like, okay, so how are we going to fix this shortage, the skill gap? You have companies that have million vacancies. They need people. However, sometimes they're prerequisites don't necessarily match up to people's skills. So we have a bunch of people who are willing and wanting to get in the field, and then we have a bunch of companies that are like, we don't have any qualified people. So they provided a list in here of what could be done. So it kind of goes over what's driving the skills shortage, right? So when it comes to proficiency of cloud security, threat intelligence analysis, incident response, and supply of qualified individuals has not been able to keep pace. And then it talks about some of the three keys that businesses can use to tackle the shortage. And then they go into kind of shifting towards skills-based hiring approach, broadening the pool of those who have cybersecurity related education, such as computer engineering degrees, soft skills, such as communication, teamwork, and problem solving. And then it goes into transferable skills and recruiting workers from outside industry to fill the needs faster by tapping those adjacent or wider pool of talents, talented people, which I believe that speaks to where people are currently at, right? Where you have the one gentleman who's 61, he wants to come over to cyber. He already has some skills he can transfer over to what we currently do. But then I also talk about skilling up, right? Like taking your existing talent pool and then putting more resources into them, which the military does quite frequently. I know the federal government is doing quite frequently. I think private sector sometimes can be hesitant because you might upskill them for them to leave. So that's always a cause of concern. But I mean, that's what happens in the military and the federal side of the house. So there's different things that can be done. So what's your take on the article and kind of where we're at?
So I have very strong feelings about this. And so I'm biased to one particular avenue, and that's the skilling and reskilling of employees or just people who made that adjacent market, and people who have the desire, they just don't have the experience or the skill. And I think the thing that annoys me a lot about this field is that there's a lot of people screaming, we need more qualified people. But when it comes down to it, they don't want to invest the money, and they don't want to put the money into, you know, into people who really have the desire, really have the passion, and want to get into it. They just don't have the experience. They want somebody automatically who has like at least 5 years experience of all this experience to come in, knock things out the park. And it's like, but just like how you have to invest money into, you know, your physical infrastructure and into, you know, your systems, you have to do the same thing with your human resources. You know, to keep wanting to hire, you know, a bunch of experts to, you know, to help build your cybersecurity program or to help protect, you know, your information. It's just, you know, to me, I think you're better off. And I say this very biasly because this has been like 95% of my experience in being in this field. It's just half the battle. I feel like it's just getting past the gatekeeper. And I mean, those are my overall feelings. It's hard for me to really separate my personal experience being in this field. And just going back to my employer, I'll give them credit that they actually do have an internal program where that targets employees who don't necessarily have those technical skills and seek to equip them with those. And now they're building upon it to even more tracks. So actually right before me and you did the first interview, I was involved in that. So I had a chance to go through that skilling class. So any of my classmates watching now, shout out to the Rabbit Old crew. They know who they are. Some amazing people in that program. Some other professionals looking to expand their talents. But the main thing is, even after graduating from that program, you know, some of us have gone on to enter into cybersecurity. I mean, they're the ones who have, I mean, they're knocking it out of the park and they're doing great. But there's some of us who I know are extremely talented. I mean, you have people in there who Linux experts, people in there who are already in the auditing space, and they're having difficulty getting into cyber, not just my agency, but just in general. And, you know, I just need to actually just getting to know these people and knowing what they're capable of. It just blows my mind how, you know, people this talented can't easily just break into a field that continues to screen that we want talented people. So
right.
That's my two cents.
No, I definitely like, I think your bias is seen by the majority of people, especially those who are trying to break in. It's just like, you know, I've jumped through the hoops. I've done the things they've asked me to do, yet I can't get an interview, or I can't get past the screening. So I talked about it when I was transitioning, and some people had it worse. Some people had it better, but my experience was 52 applications. So I had 52 applications and I only received 5 screeners and 2 interviews. And thank God I was able to, get my foot in the door to have a successful interview, or else I could still be, you know, applying to all these ATSs that can care, less. Necessarily about my skill, because it's easier for you to network your way into a job than it is to get through a lot of these systems.
And that's why I promoted the book last time I had mentioned Proximity Principle, because I really feel like, especially in this space, the cybersecurity space, it is a lot, boils down to a lot of, I felt like that's how I was able to get into the agency. Where I'm at now, I kind of feel like for me to go where I need to go in the agency, I need to leverage those relationships. I encourage other people, some of my classmates that I mentioned to really, you know, leverage any sort of relationship that they may know have with a recruiter, or I mean, they know people like me on the inside and other people to really leverage those relationships, you know, to help them to get to where they're trying to go, because it's just like, outside of that, it's just like, again, if you're not like an expert with like tons of years of experience, it's really hard to stand out, even with, in some areas, with the CISSP, you know?
Right.
So, especially when you're competing with other CISSP. So yeah.
No, that's absolutely the case. So if you're not already utilizing or growing your network, then you should definitely be doing it, whether it be through LinkedIn or some other means. But for me, it was LinkedIn. It was me, because of prior experience and me working with other people, right? That's where you start at. Like, I connected with people I knew. And then from there, you just continuously grow. You see what companies they join, who works in the positions that you want to work in. Try to start talking to those people. Try to ask those questions. Mm-hmm. So I asked CISPs and PMPs and recruiters just questions on what I should be doing, how I should be going about it. And even still, right, so timing as well. So even though I had the CISP, I had the PMP, I had the graduate degree, and ton of experience in the military, that experience didn't necessarily always translate well on the application or the resume. I still had to speak to someone. So when I was able to speak to someone and then bridge that gap where he says that you did this, this, and this, and then I would start to explain. He was like, oh, you mean this? This is what we call it. This is how we do it. This is what we do.
Yeah.
And having the ability to speak to a person allowed me to then come back and interview again, and then ultimately get my foot in the door of my first job. And then once you have your foot in the door and you have some experience, then it's a little bit easier to pivot, right? Like they say, it's easier to get a job when you have a job. So that's the biggest hurdle is getting that first job. And we talk about it time over time again, right? It's about, like you said, who you know. It's about gaining experience adjacent. So it is about doing a little bit more of that homework, because you can't work the help desk because it's not your job, or just because you can't do the audit because that's not your job, you can volunteer your time, you can lab it up, you can start to take those classes and things of that nature, and then try to build as much of an adjacent resume as you can to just get that chance, which it is a shame, right? Like, the HR says check these boxes, but people who know people are also checking those boxes. So there's your number one competition. It's like, okay, they know this person. They know they've experienced their work and they want to bring them on, like just because you check a couple extra boxes doesn't necessarily mean like don't take a chance on you being a brand new product, right? When they have right. something tried and true. So you just have to make those relationships. You have to like, it's, and if you're extrovert, it, or I'm sorry, if you're introvert, it's very hard to reach out to strangers. Say, hey, I got a question.
Ryan, I'm constantly stepping outside of my comfort zone. I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone right now, man, because I'm an introvert, man. But like you're saying, it's just like you have to realize that if you really want to get to where you're going or get to that next level, you're going to have to step outside your comfort zone to some extent and do things like this. Talk to other professionals out there, you know, take risks. So I definitely get what you're saying. I'm guilty. I'm the introvert that's really having to push to put myself out there. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yes, it's a must, unfortunately, because I'm the same way, right? Like my social battery is drained very quickly. But you just have to figure out like what works for you and then how to kind of overcome those challenges. Because just it's a race. That's what I call it, the rat race, unfortunately. Like you have to train for it. You have to keep competing and then it'll all work out, but you're not going to get it by not trying. So
yeah, right. Exactly. But,
before we get off the topics and we go to what you're doing outside of work, I just wanted to cover these questions, right? So, like I said, Darich Phillips, certified CMC assessor, right? He has an Ask a CMC Assessor kind of, I don't want to say episode, it's kind of a segment that goes along with his podcast from Aspire Cyber. So he's doing big things, right? He's big in the CMC space. So his questions kind of go into the GRC space. So let's see how we can apply these to what we do, right? So he had two questions. So the first question is, how are some key metrics or indicators that organizations, what are some key metrics or indicators that organizations should use to measure the effectiveness of their GRC program? So I don't know if this really applies specifically to what you do.
At first I saw this question, I started to have flashbacks to the CSSP. This is the area in which I would say it's closely related to where I am. Me kind of have a limited experience in this area. Hopefully this answer question. I wrote this down, so I wanted to make sure I hit every point. So I would say first having a firm grasp on where your organization is with the GRC, and then creating a strategic plan with clear, measurable outcomes. This should be based off of long-term governance, risk management, and compliance goals of where you want your organization to be in 5 to 10 years, just for an example, just talking long term, since you know when you say strategic, you think, you know, way out there. Then break that plan down into GRC related measures and activities that can be tracked on an annual basis. How to tell these goals are being met can be reviewed on a monthly or quarterly basis. So some examples of when I say performance measures, so some examples of this would be like the number of employees enrolled in voluntary cyber reskilling, or the reduction in the average number of false positive SIEM alerts for internet facing devices, or improving FISMA rating for critical information systems for greater compliance with this. So if you were to take those performance measures and break those down to actual activities you would do, so you would then initiate marketing campaign to internal employees about the cyber reskilling program and its benefits. Perform monthly configuration management reviews on SIEMs. Perform penetration testing to find vulnerabilities related to A3 compliance and harden your attack surface with defense in depth techniques. Those are some examples of my interpretation of how to answer his questions of how to measure the effectiveness of a GRC program. And as far as the second part, how can organizations foster a culture that supports GRC initiatives and encourage compliance across all levels of the company. So again, with my very limited experience and knowledge, I'm going to give you my idealistic answer because, again, I haven't been in this space long enough to really know what is realistic. But I would say management needs to create a buy-in from its key internal stakeholders on meeting the goals set in the strategic plan that I mentioned before. From a risk management and compliance point of view, I don't think this should be very hard to do to get the buy-in. The last thing anyone wants is to be dinged on an external audit or the victim of a data breach. So, you know, it's not really a hard sale as far as, you know, it should be a hard sale, ideally, to try to get some of your departments there to be compliant as far as certain cybersecurity standards or NIST or FISMA standards or mitigating or eliminating some of the risks. And then looking at things from a governance standpoint, it's always good to have a good, it's always good to have a set definition of success, a definition of standard. That way you always know what you're working towards. So, again, not very technical. I know it's very idealistic of things. You know, those are things that probably would like in an ideal world, but how that plays out in the real world and trying to get people on board as far as governance or risk and compliance. You know, I'm gonna say that I know nothing about that. Wink, wink. So.
Gotcha.
I can only say so much, but yeah, you read between the lines. Like I said, ideally, yeah, this is what you would want, but how it actually, you know, plays out when you're looking to try to get that compliance, or when you're looking to really try to get those departments to hit those metrics. Yeah.
I think you answered it very appropriately. And I think it's not necessarily ideal. I think simple is always better because I think people kind of overthink it, especially when it comes to like current GRC, because it's spinning up so hard, so fast, where people are starting to get worried about CMMC finally, right? We've been talking about it for years. Now 2.0 is out the door. People are starting to panic. Like, you should have panicked years ago. Like, what are you doing? But from my perspective, the way I would answer it would be from the perspective of an assessor in my case, right? So I've been what I like to call it the victim. I've been the person who's been audited and assessed. So I have a lot of experience with that from my active military days. But here on the outside, I'd keep it very simple. Like I know from the gate, when I arrive on site or I do it virtually or whatever, I'm doing my assessment audit, I'm going to ask you for some simple things. I want your equipment inventory. I want to make sure that it identifies if you know how many resources you have, what those resources are, when's the last time they've been patched, or the last time they've been serviced in any way, right? Do you know what you have, those assets, and do you know who has them? And then the second part, policy. I want your business continuity plan. I want your disaster preparedness plan. Like, I want to see your policies, your security policy. I want to see them because that will definitely tell me if you have the fundamentals down and has it been updated? Have the appropriate people signed it? Does it even match up to the framework that you're being assessed against, right? Like, if you're a medical, like, is this high trust? If you're something else, is it NIST CSF applicable? Like, do you have the right just doctrine first before we start to dig into the artifacts? Like, if you don't have the doctrine together, probably the rest of your house is also not built very well. That's just my perspective. And I know you're not supposed to come in with a bias. When I was being assessed, I would always make sure my stuff was together. I'm giving you stuff you didn't even ask for because I know it's hot. I almost cursed. I know it's well put together, right? Because I'm the person who probably put it together. Like, here is the inventory. Here is the policies. Here is whatever else. Like, I've already read ahead. I already know the questions you're going to ask. So that way you ask me for something, I'm like, boop, there you go. Boop, there you go. And if it looks good, it smells good, it probably is good. And yeah, I probably have some skeletons in the closet, but I've already made your life easier. So now you're getting relaxed, Mr. Assessor, Mr. Auditor. You're going to get off my back. So... Well, that's usually my two cents, right?
No, that's good. No, that's definitely good. Just to kind of somebody who's experienced in that area kind of get your feedback. So no, that's good.
Yeah, but no, I think we've holistically answered the question that another very seasoned assessor asked, right? So he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. That's why he asked those questions. So we appreciate Darius Phillips for asking those. What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to get ahead next time. Like, this was only like a 1-day suspense. I'm going to try to get it a week out. Like, ask me some questions, because I think those are the best way to pick our brains. And that's what the show is called, right? Ask Assist P. So I like to answer those. So no, spot on. I appreciate it. And this is the second time I've had two, like the minds meld between two SISPs on the show. And I really do like this format. So I think I'm gonna keep it going from here on out. So before I let you go, hard pivot. So outside of work, right? So I know you're doing your research, you're doing your studying, you're getting ready for your PMP. You're a busy man. I get that. What are you doing when you do have the spare time? What are you doing to unwind or relax? Like, what is your current schedule?
So, Wes, because it's cold, man, I'm kind of hibernating. So,
I'm in Florida. I don't know what cold is, sir. It's 70 on a cold day. All right.
Yeah, you don't know what cold is. I do some gaming. Do some of that. Hang out with some buddies. You know, we're adults now, so we got to schedule time.
I hear that. What are you playing? What kind of games are you playing?
Oh man, I do a lot of indie stuff now, man. The older I get, man, I just take stuff in little bites now. You know what?
So you're speaking to me, because it's hard to play anything that's too robust.
Let me tell you, Ryan. I had to make a promise to myself. Until I'm done with this PSP, I will not touch a RPG, a JRPG.
Oh yeah,
RPG, any type of open world game, none of that. I'm gonna tell you what happens. I'm gonna come down here in the basement, and you're not gonna see me then. So I know what happens when I get those type of games, and right now that is not a good time to for me to do that. So I keep the gaming at little light sized, like little indie games here and there, whatever things I can kind of, you know, take up my time and get through pretty fast. Something that's not too big of a distraction.
Gotcha.
Outside of that, just time with my kids, the wife and I, we usually find different things to do with them during the weekend. Like go to a malls. Like a couple weeks ago, we took a son and daughter. They had a little Hot Wheels pop-up type of a place where my son loves Hot Wheels. So, you know, little arcade games they play in there. They play with the Hot Wheel toys on certain slopes and curves and stuff. So they had all type of really cool things that they love there. So I would say things like that. Again, not a whole lot going on, because it's a little colder up here. We're getting into a lot more, as we always do. So not a whole lot, not too much. Things that preoccupy my time on the weekends, but, you know, nothing fairly elaborate.
I get that. So, I'm the same as you. I've been trying to dabble, though, a little bit into some bigger stuff. So I'm supposed to be studying for my CCSP, right? Cloud Certified Security Professional. Okay. So it's not ISC Squared anymore. You know, it's ISC2. They rebranded it.
Yes. Well, I still call it
Squared.
Yeah,
I still say Squared. Yeah, you're right. Yes, ISC2. I was like,
yeah,
what?
I saw that.
I didn't know that. So, yeah. So I'm trying to study for that. That's on and off. I'm very interested in it, however, right? However, it's just, it's a lot. It's a big exam, and I'm kind of tired, right? I kind of want to unwind a little bit. So I've been trying to play a little bit of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. But like you said, I'm afraid of getting too sucked in, because that's a good 80-hour game, right? To 100. And then I've been playing quick matches of Helldivers 2. So that's like 15 minutes. You just jump in, blow up everything, get blown up, and then you just roll out. You just
I got into part one. I haven't tried two yet, but I remember
it's
playing through
one. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I think you'll really enjoy it. I'm not trying to distract you. Like, keep pursuing the PMP. Then reward yourself.
So do you think the CSCP, you think it's going to be harder, in your opinion, than CSSP? Or
no, I don't think so. I think it'll be a little bit easier, right? I think from my understanding is because it's very vendor neutral, and it's more of a an adjacent certification, like you are SSP and you also understand cloud. I'm sure you could do it the other way around as well, but from everything I've read, like on Reddit and other forums, it's a lot easier than the SSP if you already have the SSP.
Okay. So,
and cloud, I'm kind of cloud blind, right? I haven't picked a certain pathway. I haven't picked if I want to do AWS or Azure or even Oracle, right? So it's going to be kind of neutral.
So if you're just I went to work, I wanted to at least get a cloud practitioner in Amazon. Gotcha. And then I wanted to get a fundamental step one in Azure. At least get the fundamentals, the entry level ones. Just to have that vendor specific knowledge of cloud. I know it, you know, in the government, AWS is like it.
Right.
So for me to be able to understand AWS on a very fundamental or basic level, that's what I want to accomplish. Don't know if I want to go real deep into that space, but kind of same thing. I plan after my PMP to go. Have you ever heard TCM as far as pen testing? So they have a junior level and a practical level certification when it comes to pen testing. I think they're like right under OCSP, which I don't know if I want to go that far, because I've heard that's farther than CSSP, because all of this stuff is practical.
I mean, that's a monster. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, I want to be able to at least do those to have. That's a skill set that I definitely want under my belt. That red team skill set, and maybe do the blue team one certification. I seen a guy get that on my timeline and really looked into that. Thought maybe it'll be valuable. So having those skill sets under my belt on a very basic level, you know, so even if I do like project cybersecurity project management, you know, that I can be able to speak the same language as those pen testers or, right, you know, assist in some way, you know, on a technical level, just not getting way into weeds.
Gotcha. So that makes sense. Yeah. Especially from being, you know, practical level, I think that would be a really good matchup. So so like best of wishes to you. I'm not going to be anything new with pen testing. Like I've done the project management of pen testers, right?
Okay.
But the actual technical, I can't speak it. I can't do it.
Man, I was just watching those guys back in November, and it was just like, how do you all just know how to do this stuff? Like, I mean, they just switch from one tool to the other, put in all this one lens command. It's like even the guy I was in class with, man. I mean, it just amazes me just how fast they can just pivot within that Linux architecture like that, and just, you know, move from one tool to another and just seamlessly, you know, just know what commands to run and just, you know, and just the situational awareness. It just amazes me. Like I said, I want to be able to understand that on a fundamental level, but yeah, I don't, that the going so far to OSCP, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, but no, that's what's up. And good luck on your PMB. Like, I know you'll definitely keep me plugged in. But yeah, I think you conquered the harder of the two. So not to gas you up, but I think you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But yeah, thank you for joining the show again, right? Like, I'm trying to get everybody back on. So I'm definitely happy that you jumped back on the schedule. I wish it was a little bit wider. Oh yeah, definitely. I wish I could open up my schedule a little bit more, but I still got 9 to 5. I still got family, right?
Oh, so
just one of these a week is all I can handle. But no, thank you for that. Thank you for coming on to answer the questions. Definitely have to get you back on the schedule again, right? We can't make it almost a year before we get you back on, because that's a long time, right? So we'll try to get you like whenever
you want to talk about, though. So, you know, take, however long it take. It's fine with me. I have more to talk about this time. So
That's true. That's true too. But yeah, we'll definitely catch where people can find you. So real quick, again, please like, share, subscribe, all the stuff I always forget about. We're trying to get our numbers to 500 connections. I'm thinking LinkedIn. 500 subscriptions on YouTube because we're trying to work our way towards just a broader audience, and you have to have so many subs and so many watches, and that opens you up for more stuff. So we're trying to hit 500 before I'm shooting for June, so that way I can then pivot and be like, I want 1,000 by December, because the more you get, the quicker it is to keep going up, right? So that's the plan. Hit us up by all the places. So you can find us on LinkedIn. We have articles now on LinkedIn, and on Medium, we have a newsletter that goes out weekly. I'm trying to always polish that one and make it a little bit more robust. So just trying to be more mindful and have more intent with the content we're pushing out, because we definitely appreciate our loyal subscription base. And now we're just trying to broaden and get a few more people in there as well. Just have so much content. It's a shame it's not viewed by more people, right? We have over 560 episodes. I want to make sure those get touched and watched and viewed and all that other good stuff, listened to as much as possible. So hit us up on LinkedIn, Facebook, Clubhouse, Twitter, and Instagram, and then soon TikTok before that gets shut down. And then you can be a person at RyRy Security Guy. That's RyRy Security Guy. You can find me on LinkedIn, Clubhouse, Twitter, and Instagram as well. And where can they find you?
Mainly on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I think my link, it just has my name, Daryl Brooks, in it. But if you just look up Daryl Brooks, CSSP, that's how I appear on LinkedIn. So yeah, that's probably the best place to find me.
Okay, absolutely. It'll definitely be in the description for this episode. So if you have not already, please make sure you're tuned in every Thursday's Ask a CSSP, where I again sit down with someone who is out there just making great strides, really boosting the community, and is just part of the I guess my tribe, so to speak, right? So we're speaking the same language, we're all into the same stuff, and it's just good to have that those people. They're on the same path as you, and it's like this being at the CSSP level is no joke, right? So not to discourage anybody from pursuing it, but you definitely have to have experience. So please go ahead and do that, get that experience, so we can hurry up and get you in the circle as well. So that way this just keeps broadening and opening up our aperture, so we're not the 7% or the 9%, right? It will get in the teens. We'll be more and more people of color within this space, more women in this space, more people of different, neurodiversity and things of that nature. Like, we want as many people to be over here in cybersecurity as possible, because it just makes us stronger, makes us a better community. So that's what it's all about. Hit up all the websites to go by our name. It's either The Other Side of the Firewall, The Other Side of the FW, or Ask a CSSP. And then just continue to tune in. Stay safe. Stay secure.
Yeah.